You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Air traffic controllers falling asleep, holes blowing open in the fuselage mid-flight, and don't forget the enhanced pat-downs, the delays, and price hikes. It seems like the problems involving flying are in the news every day. Barbara S. Peterson, Condé Nast Traveler's senior aviation correspondent, joins us now to sort through it all, from the new FAA rules to airplane maintenance oversight. She's also the author of two books on the industry, Blue Streak and Rapid Descent. I'm very pleased to welcome her back to our show today. And also, we invite your calls. If you have a question for Barbara Peterson about air travel, call us at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Earlier this month, Southwest Airlines grounded many of its Boeing 737 planes after a hole blew open in the roof of one of its planes mid-flight. It led Southwest to cancel about 300 flights. Did the airline handle the crisis well, do you think?
I think so. I think they handled it about as well as they could, considering that they were able to limit the number of cancellations and accommodate passengers on other flights. And it was almost 80 planes, which sounds like a lot. But then when you consider that they have a huge fleet of more than 500 planes, that, you know, that meant they were still operating most of their flights.
Well, these are the Boeing 737s. Is that kind of plane especially vulnerable to problems with its outer skin, as it's called?
Well, as you know, Southwest only operates 737s. That's part of its whole model, you know, keeping it simple, one type of plane, one type of class of service. You know, that's its hallmark. But within that big group, there are various models, and some of them date back 20 years. Some are brand new. You know, so there's a whole series, and it really, you have to focus in on which model it is, and that's where it gets a little more complicated. This was the 300 series. That the plane in question was 15 years old, and again, that might not sound so old, except that the way airplane age is measured, it's measured in cycles. You know, one takeoff and landing, and again, it goes back to the unique way that Southwest does business. They do a lot of these quick turnarounds and short hauls. So their planes get a lot more of these cycles in a given year than another airline's planes might.
It's what's made them popular with many passengers. They're more likely to take off on time. On the other hand, that would suggest that they're pushing their planes a little harder. It's almost like the stagecoach that doesn't let the horses rest.
Exactly.
Well, yes. Do other airlines, did they also ground their 737s for inspection?
Well, they are looking at this whole group of planes, and Boeing has actually put out a directive. And they've also told the industry that basically they were a bit taken aback by this. They didn't expect this to happen at this stage in the aircraft's life. So that, I think, was one thing that really concerned people who watch the industry. Now, why did this happen earlier? Because they have a whole series of staged inspections that are supposed to happen at particular times in a plane's life, and maybe they need to step those up.
Well, weren't there concerns about metal fatigue 23 years ago as a result of an accident involving Aloha Airlines?
Yes.
And new rules were implemented then, and new bolts were employed by Boeing. So is there any way we can avoid this kind of thing?
Exactly. Everybody's saying, yes, why? We thought we fixed this one, you know, many years ago. But that isn't really the way things happen. Generally, a crisis is what sort of drives these changes, but they come in gradual phases. Everybody wants a quick fix. Yes, we haven't had an accident like Aloha's, thank goodness, in many, many years, and hopefully we never will because of what we've learned. But it turns out there are different parts of the plane that are supposed to get different, you know, sort of types of attention at different times, and it doesn't always happen that way. And what some safety advocates are arguing is that what they ought to do is take what they call the fleet leader. That's any given airline's fleet, there's one plane that has the most miles on it. Take that one out and give it, basically almost tear it apart and really look for anything that might hint at problems down the line.
Were regulations relaxed over the 23 years since the Aloha accident?
Well, that's an interesting question. A lot of people believe that when the airlines were economically deregulated, it also had an effect on safety. But actually, safety wasn't part of that law at all. The Federal Aviation Administration is the government agency that handles that, and that is separate from that. It was never supposed to have been affected by deregulation. So, no, there is a typical back and forth, though, that goes on with the National Transportation Safety Board, which actually investigates accidents, and they make recommendations. But they have no enforcement powers. They can't say to the airlines, you must do this. Then they go back to the FAA, and there's a bit of a dance back and forth because the FAA listens to all sides, including, of course, the industry. And so they tend to take their time before they implement it.
And many people have accused the FAA of being a little too cozy with the industry and allowing certain things to happen that, well, yes. Maybe they understand the problems of the airline industry, but for me, somebody who's going to be on that plane, I don't want to know about that.
Exactly. No, that is a real concern. And that goes back to years ago. It was actually written in the law that the FAA had a dual mandate. It was supposed to promote the industry at the same time it was regulating the industry. And that was a clear conflict. Now, they removed that language from the law, but you have to change the culture as well. I think they've gotten better, though, I must say. I think the new administrator who came in, he's a former airline pilot. He was actually a very activist union leader and who frequently criticized the FAA when he was in that role. So, you know, he seems that he's focusing a lot more on this. Than
last year, Frontline did a television documentary about the problems, and they said that the airlines are falling behind on their inspections. But they also talked about airlines sending planes overseas to be inspected into repair shops and claims that often things are just overlooked on purpose. It's cheaper.
Yes, well, we also did an article on that for our magazine, an investigation that appeared last October, and we examined a lot of those same things. And yes, one of the issues is that the airlines are sending a lot more planes overseas for what they call heavy maintenance, which is, you know, can take weeks and sometimes months. So it's really almost a tear down and, you know, total gut renovation almost of a plane. So that's very critical that it be done well. Now, the whole point of the system is it can be done well overseas, except we need somebody looking over the shoulder of these people.
And there's not enough oversight?
Well, the inspectors have been complaining that they are stretched too thin. And that they need more of them, and that they need to be able to make unannounced inspections rather than, you know, have them broadcast months in advance.
So they're just sending them there to save money? I would think it's more expensive to send a jet to Beijing to be maintained rather than to Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, actually, if the airline in question is flying to Beijing anyway, then it makes sense. And in a sense, that's one of the arguments the industry has always used. They say, look, our planes are mobile assets. They're flying to South America. They're flying to Asia. So, and we can get the work done for, you know, a lot less than they can here. And in fact, most major airlines used to have their own in-house shops that did these things. They've shut them down for the most part. There are not that many left.
That's because Scott Walker is running all the airlines, you say? My guest is Barbara S. Peterson, who's Condé Nast Traveler's senior aviation correspondent. And we're talking about some of the problems in aviation these days. In the past few weeks, there have been numerous stories about air traffic controllers falling asleep. In March, one fell asleep at Reagan International Airport. Is there normally just one controller in the tower of an airport that big and that busy?
At that time of day, or night, we should say.
It was like
yes.
3 a.m. or something?
Yes, a lot of airports are virtually closed in the middle of the night. And some of them have curfews, actually. So they probably won't be having too many scheduled flights at that hour. Now, that was a major airline. I think that's why this got so much attention. And now, you know, not a day goes by without another story about a snoozing controller. And you have to wonder, did this just start happening or did they just start paying attention to it? So I don't think this is exactly a brand new problem.
Well, it's only when there's an emergency. And in some cases, it's yes. Because people have to make emergency landings and they prefer to land at Reagan or at JFK than they would at some small airport in the middle of nowhere.
Yes. Yes. But, you know, pilots can, and as we've seen, they can land actually at an airport without a controller, an alert controller in the towers.
But it's interesting that it's Reagan because some people have said that the air traffic control system has never fully recovered from President Reagan's firing of the striking air traffic controllers.
Yes, well, that is a really good point because what happened was that created a real demographic bubble that we're sort of just seeing now. What happened was, 12,000 controllers walk off the job and were fired in a single day. That was pretty dramatic blow to the system. They built it back, but of course then they had to have another hiring binge. So the controllers have been reaching retirement age now in that what was then the freshman class. And the problem is they have a retirement age of 56, which seems to a lot of people quite young. But that's
with all that stress.
Exactly. It's a burnout job, and it's you will not find the controllers trying to agitate for being able to work till 60 or 65. No, they that's going to stay, I think. So the FAA has been trying to ramp up, and get a lot of controllers through training, but it's not a short process. And right now, you see this figure, they've got 15,000 controllers, but more than a quarter of them are trainees. They really cannot work alone. They have to have someone with them. So they still have these staffing issues. And therefore, they're working six-day weeks. They're working long shifts, sometimes back-to-back. And it's not unique to this part of transportation. We've seen pilots as well. They have fatigue issues. It is a very serious issue, though, when you have a safety-related job like this.
So the FAA has instituted new rules which have to do with dealing with the fatigue. What about the next-gen system that's being implemented?
Well, the problem is it's still next gen. It's not now gen. And they have been talking about this for so long. In fact, they've had to rename it because it got sort of embarrassing. Yes, there is a next gen program. What it needs is money. And that's, of course, an issue that they've been fighting over for years. It has made some progress. They've gotten some, contracts out now to start building. What it is essentially, it's replacing the old sort of World War II era system, of radar beacons with a satellite-based, GPS system, which, of course, the rest of the world is on.
Every driver has the potential of using GPS, but airports don't?
Well, it requires, though, a lot of new equipment and a lot of very expensive infrastructure. And it also requires about $20 billion in funding from the federal side and maybe a like amount from the airline industry. And the airline industry, as we know, hasn't had too much money to spare in recent years.
We invite your calls at 646-829-3985. If you have any concerns about air safety these days? My guest is Barbara S. Peterson, Condé Nast Traveler's senior aviation correspondent, also the author of two books on the industry, Blue Streak and Rapid Descent, one of which brought her here earlier. And we'll be back with more after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Barbara S. Peterson, Condé Nast Traveler's senior aviation correspondent. We're talking about the problems with the airlines these days and some of the problems that we're hoping will be fixed because so many of us do rely on air travel. The alternative, taking buses, doesn't seem to be all that safe either. And our number here is 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Rising gas prices seem to be an obvious cause for rising ticket prices, but is that the only reason?
Well, no, it's not the only reason. It's the primary reason. Yes, jet fuel costs are now up about 49% compared with the same month last year. So that really does deal a real shock to the airline's bottom line. But the other thing that's happened is the airlines are basically recovering from almost 10 years of terrible losses. In fact, the airline industry refers to it as their lost decade because it really was. It started, basically around 9/11 and just went downhill from there, it seemed. And
that's because deregulation forced them all to keep their prices lower than they would have liked?
Well, I think competition does put a brake on prices. And the other issue is, of course, it's a tough industry to make sustained profits. And even in good times, their profits are razor thin because there are so many factors out of their control. Just, what we were just talking about, the price of jet fuel. World events, something terrible happens in some part of the world and everybody stops traveling. You have the economy. That's another thing. Right, in 2003 and then later in 2008, 2009, they were recovering, except then suddenly the demand evaporated.
But didn't they cut back on the number of flights as a way of dealing with this? I've even had a situation where I went home to get my luggage and found voicemail from JetBlue telling me that my flight had been canceled because of weather, which was not a reason because they were flying. I was going to Long Beach and they were still flying to Los Angeles and San Diego. So, but they didn't give me any alternative. They just simply said the flight's been canceled because of weather.
Yeah,
as far as I'm concerned, that was they didn't fill up the airplane.
Well, I think what's happened now is that there isn't much slack left in the system. And so if something like that happens, they may be looking to reaccommodate you. It might be a week later. And what's happened is they finally got the handle on one of the biggest issues they've been fighting with themselves about for years, which is too much capacity. They finally got demand in line with capacity. Their planes are flying fuller than ever before. And last year, actually, there were fewer flights than in 2009. However, they were carrying more people. So you do the math. Okay, the planes are filling up. Now that means the airlines, of course, are finally getting back to a position where they have some control again over pricing. For a long time, they could not raise fares and sustain that because what would happen is it would last maybe, you know, a few days or something. And then one of the competitors would say, hey, wait a minute. If we lower ours a little, we can start getting everybody to come to us. So, you know, the vicious circle would start again.
But then they did all sorts of things to save money. We have a caller who has one concern along this line. John from Paramus, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? I pick up at the airport four times a day at least, and no one ever says the planes are empty. They're always full. But my question is, they charge you for the bags. Now, they're making money on all these fees, and they charge you for the bag. If they lose your bag or it's delayed and it comes in on another flight, you get a refund for that. And if not, why not?
Well, they are... Some airlines will give you a refund on that, but usually if they return it to you within a certain, what they call a reasonable period of time, then it's not really considered a lost bag. And that gets into the airline's sort of funny lexicon here. They call it mishandled. You see, you'll never hear an airline refer to a bag as lost. And that's because actually they do recover most bags. There are very few bags that just disappear into the ether and are never seen again. It can take sometimes a few days, and it can wreck somebody's trip. So, yes, it is a serious issue.
Well, in the past, when they didn't charge you for it, it didn't feel as insulting. But now there's – everybody complained about airline food. Now that lousy food costs money. I understand Ryanair wanted to charge passengers to use the bathroom.
Yeah, well, Ryanair will say anything, apparently, to get its name in the paper. So we have to take that one with a grain of salt.
But all these fees are legal?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And the airlines, in a funny sense, have figured out a way to raise fares without really raising them. It's sort of a backdoor fare increase. On the one hand, yes, most of these are discretionary in the sense that I guess you have a choice. You know, you could say, okay, I'm not going to check a bag. I'll try to travel with one of these little duffels or wheelies, and even those will get you into trouble if it doesn't fit in the bin. And you can try, you can say, oh, I'll bring my own lunch. There are ways you can get around it. But
And my own headphones.
Exactly. Yes. But the other day I was booking a trip on an airline, and I realized they were asking me to pay for a seat assignment. Even a middle seat would have cost me something. Every single seat on that flight, I had to pay something to get an advanced seat assignment.
Wow. They've been charging people for the what is that row called? The escape row.
Yes, the exit.
Because you got the exit row because you get more leg room there.
Yes.
They've been charging a premium price for those.
Now, why?
And bulkhead.
You might wonder why there isn't even more outrage. There is a lot of outrage, but the strange thing is you notice a lot of silence from the really frequent flyers, the George Clooneys. Well, the reason is that most of those real premium, 100K flyers, they can avoid those fees. That's one of the perks that comes along with the privilege.
We have a caller, William from Westport, who knows something about the business. Hi.
Hi, how are you today? I enjoy your show so much. Thanks for letting me talk to you. Three things, one of which, you just gave grief to the airlines about your flight in JetBlue being canceled because of weather. Where was your plane coming from? That might answer the question.
Cause New York, JFK. It was a perfectly fine. My assumption, and I think I was absolutely right, was that they just didn't fill up the plane. It was to Long Beach. And so they said it was weather. I had had earlier problems with JetBlue. I was one of the people who was hurt during that incredible debacle with canceled flights. In that case, they gave me my money back. Well, thank you so much. I spent hours and hours and hours at JFK waiting for flights that never took off because they could not get any of the support staff into the plane. They had the pilots, but nobody else. Anyway, Captain, do you want to say something?
The crew might have come from a place that did have weather, and they were bogged down because their plane didn't arrive, and so they didn't have the crews for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I called was not related to that, but was related to crew rest breaks or controller rest, and also about the tarmac delay rule.
Well, now you're a captain on Delta.
Yep, that's right. I'm an international captain, and I fly to Milan all the time, and I never see George Clooney on the flight, so I'm not sure that he's flying commercially.
Now, I like that flight from Milan, and actually Delta doesn't charge you for the food, at least
well,
from Milan.
Well, international flights, they charge a reasonable fare for the ticket. The reason why they're having to charge for all this extemporaneous stuff is because the price of an airline ticket is a fraction of what it was 30 years ago in a present value analysis, if you do, you know, that. But my question is to you, the concern for passengers about having their crew rested or their controllers rested, and the concern about having the passengers imprisoned on an airplane for hours on end sitting on the tarmac waiting to take off, why is it that the support groups for the passengers don't force the issue to have rules and regulations that are effective? And the reason why I say that is the reason why the controllers are falling asleep in the middle of the night is because they're doing back-to-back shifts and not getting any rest, and that should be against the law. And the reason why pilots are falling asleep is because their duty days and their duty regs are awful. And the latest rule that just got enacted are terrible. They're extending it to even longer, less breaks and longer time periods that will have two pilots flying across the Atlantic without being able to take a break for an extent up to 8 hours, and they're trying to push it to 9. And the tarmac delay rule does nothing but inconvenience passengers. This latest FAA rule, which is kind of like having the wolves guard the hen house, the reason why an airline plane can't take off because of weather is because you got to get in line. First come, first serve. So you taxi out, and you might have a two-hour delay to take off on the ramp. But if an airline is going to get penalized, which, you know, they don't want to sit on the ramp and wait to take off because they're burning gas and it's inconvenient for them and it's not efficient and the flight's delayed. But because of the FAA, you're stuck. So you got to stay in line. And if you get stuck in that line and decide, well, because we're going to get penalized, we got to get back and go to the gate and let the people off for 5 minutes, then they're going to be back in the line even further. So what does the airline do to prevent this huge debacle? They cancel half the flights because they're going to get penalized $2 million a flight. What is it, $26,000 per passenger?
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
And so the way they solve that, and right after they enacted the rule, I went through Atlanta. I don't usually fly domestic, but I just happened to have a trip. And I've never seen the lines and the chaos in airports like that ever.
Barbara?
Yes, well, actually, what has been happening, and we saw this past winter when we had all those blizzards, is the airlines have been doing a lot more of what they call pre-cancellation. So I think that's what your caller was really just referring to, the idea that, well, let's not wait until the whole thing breaks down. Let's not wait until, like, another JetBlue-style debacle. Let's just preempt it, and we're just going to start canceling flights even 12 hours before the event is supposed to hit. And they do that in part so then they can keep their planes where they know they're going to be, where they can avoid some of the situations that your caller is referring to. But what it does is it substitutes one group of inconvenienced passengers for another. You know, I mean, you're ultimately going to inconvenience a lot of people.
But the captain says that you got to stay on the tarmac or you lose your place in line. Couldn't those rules be changed? Who makes these rules?
Well, that points to another problem.
I mean, you could, if you're waiting online to go into a movie theater, you can say to the person in front of you, could you watch my spot for a little bit? I want to go get a cup of coffee. If you know that you're number three and there's been a large backup, you could go back to the terminal. And then when it comes your time, reload the passengers and go out there, right?
Look, you know, we've got to put you in charge of this. I think that's that is such an obviously logical thing
it's
to
so
do.
And yet, okay,
no. Now you're touching on something else that's a real problem, because who controls scheduling? Well, there's a good answer to that. No one. No, an airport, and unfortunately, New York area, our airports are among the most delayed and congested in the country, and they routinely have more flights scheduled to take off than can be handled even in optimal conditions. So you have the situation where, no, the aircraft has to get out there and get their places in line. But now with this new rule, of course, there could be a very costly mistake if you don't calculate it correctly. So sometimes they will just decide not to even chance it.
Tom from Manhattan, hi. You have a question along these lines.
Yeah, that was my question. Why do the airlines have this fictitious scheduling which says that all these flights can get out from 7 to 9? You get these international delays that are just outrageous. People sitting on planes for 2 hours sometimes, and you know these flights. You have a 40-minute flight that takes almost 3 hours sometimes.
It's because everybody wants to arrive in their destination at a certain point.
Yes, well, there's certain. It's just like anything. There's a rush hour, and then there's a slow period. And of course, the rush hour is when we all want to get there, right? So, but the problem there is that you're talking about a lot of different companies and competing companies, I might add, all scheduling in their own little bubble. They're not talking to their competitors. They're not allowed to talk to their competitors about scheduling. So let's say airline A, you know, puts on a bunch of flights between 8 and 9. Well, airline B also wants to get the same number of flights on, and so on and so on. They all do that. They can't talk to each other, and I'm sure they want to talk to each other. Now, the airport authority, they claim that they have no jurisdiction over airline decisions like that. Those are company decisions. The FAA has in the past, but usually only when it's really reached crisis levels, they have stepped in and imposed on the airlines like a scheduling committee and said, look, you guys have to sit down and talk to each other. This isn't working. That has happened, though, very rarely. And I think it'll take another sort of summer of hell to bring that about.
Now, can you tell me why it is that the place I have to go to take off is always at the very end of the corridor? That's a whole other issue, right? That's just that they're picking on me. Barbara S. Peterson is Condé Nast Traveler Senior Aviation Correspondent. We're talking about the current situation with the airlines. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Early this year, American Airlines announced that it no longer wanted its flights listed on sites like Travelocity and Expedia. Now, Southwest has always had that policy, but what's the reason, and are other airlines going along with it?
Well, I think the airlines really want most people to come directly to them to book their travel. So they're trying to do anything they can to push more of that traffic directly to their websites. And it seems to be working. As you point out, Southwest, which always has this very transparent, easy, that's their whole, you know, game. They've always wanted to do that. And now eventually, though, they did have to relent a bit, and they did have to work with some of these online travel agencies. But
cost them a lot of money? Is this like using American Express? You have to pay a fee?
Well, there is something to that. Yes, it does cost them something. It also, people are increasingly, when they go on a site, be it an airline site or one of these online agencies, and they're booking other parts of their trip. They're booking their car rental or their hotel or maybe a tour package or something. So the airlines want more of that revenue to come directly to them. In other words, in a sense, it's the industry sort of fighting over how many, you know, pieces of the pie they can all get for themselves.
A lot of our listeners are writing in about two other things. We don't have a lot of time. One of them is how sorry they feel for the flight attendants now that there have been cutbacks there, and how they get stuck with all sorts of things they didn't in the past because everybody wants to bring bags on, and so the flight attendants spend a lot of time just trying to shove those bags or into overhead bins or find places for them. I never had to worry about it as much, and that actually can hold up a flight. And the other one, of course, is going through security, which has become more and more of a problem. In the old days, you could arrive an hour before your flight left. Now that's how long it takes just to take off your shoes and hope that somebody doesn't find something weird in your bag.
Yes, I think a big reason why people are just so down on air travel in general really has to do with getting to your flight. It has to do with even the things that happen well before you get to the gate. And security, of course, is an issue because it's really unpredictable. And that is, you can miss your flight if you just don't time it well.
Now, Marcello in Brooklyn asks, how come international tickets bought in Europe are much cheaper than those same tickets bought in the United States? Do you know that's true?
Well, it might have to do with the currency conversion. I think that you can actually, I think some people have actually been out there trying hard to figure out how to game that, be able to buy it over there and get their price rather than our price. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that the dollar has been down.
Well, on the other hand, if you try to buy stuff in Italy, for example, and you're not Italian, you pay more. Maybe in other European countries as well, but I just had that experience. If you try to book a car rental in Europe, it's always more expensive than it is if you book it here for Europe. So maybe there's some kind of a trade-off.
Yeah, well, it should even. I will say this year, this summer, international airfares really are up dramatically. And I think demand is way up.
A listener asks if there's any silver lining here.
I would say part of it is we're still traveling. And for all people complain about air travel, we still want to do it. So, I do think there is a silver lining in terms of, I guess if you're talking about some of the chaos that we've seen and some of the issues, that I think the airlines have gotten better at some of these things. They are, I've seen some evidence they're actually trying. One little story that got almost no traction recently, but I thought was very telling, is that some of the large airlines have moved those offshore call centers, the ones that you'd call the 800 number and you'd be talking to someone in Bangalore. They're moving those back to the United States because there were so many complaints. Because, frankly, these days you can do a lot online. So if you're really you've got something that complicated that you have to call their number, you need somebody who knows what they're doing. So in a sense, they listened to their consumers. They actually heard the complaints. So maybe that's one good sign. I'd like to hear from your listeners if there are any others they've noticed.
A week ago, two planes collided on the runway at JFK. Is that kind of incident common?
No, it's not common. But one of the things that safety experts have warned about is that we're not paying enough attention to the potential for crashes on the ground. In fact, some people believe that is possibly going to be the next accident because there again, we need more modern equipment, better ways of detecting who is where, and that also ties back with what we started talking about earlier about the air traffic controllers. There was a case a couple years ago in Los Angeles where two planes came very close to each other, like 37 feet or something. And it was such a scary incident that the city council in L.A. actually took the unusual step of demanding that the FAA put more controllers in the tower.
My great thanks to Barbara S. Peterson, Condé Nast Traveler's senior aviation correspondent. It's been a lot of fun, if you call talking about all these dangerous things fun.
Thank you.